CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Conrad Black, the distinguished biographer and Canadian citizen, and Lord Black of the Parliament, to comment on Canadian history and the phenomenon of the flag, the Canadian flag, the American flag, the flag of Great Britain. Conrad, I tell this story because it connects with your most recent column at the National Post about people who are patriotic and believe in waving the flag and talking about how proud they are of their country. In Britain, there was recently a by-election at Hartlepool, which is the northeast shoulder of England. And it's a traditional Labour seat. What was striking to everyone is that not only did the Tories, the Conservatives, win, they won easily, despite Boris Johnson's colorful reputation for going this way and that way during the pandemic, despite the shutdown, despite the lack of recovery at the time, an overwhelming success in a Labour district. There were fingers pointed at Keir Starmer, but I thought what was most compelling is what I learned from Adrian Wooldridge, who is Badgett for The Economist. He told me that what happens at Hartlepool is that the working class, traditionally the Labour vote forever, very much sides with people who are pleased with Great Britain, who are pleased with the empire, who are not apologizing for the mistakes and the successes and everything else that sums up the history of England the last 1,000 years since the Normans arrived. Now, I'm struck by how that seems to be a note in Canada as well. Have I read you correctly? Pleased with the country's background. Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening to you, John. Yeah, I think you have. I think you read it exactly correctly. The left-wing parties in Britain in particular, but the same could be said, broadly speaking, of the United States, where you know, since both parties traditionally were kind of broad church parties, you had people from well to the left, to the center in the Democrats, and well to the right, to the center in the Republicans. Precisely the point you made, the Labour element, the workers and the unions in general, believe in national pride. They're proud of the country. They want more for themselves, but they're proud of the country. And we saw that with the hard hats supporting President Nixon and, you know, coming down out of buildings and interrupting the parades of anti-war people carrying Viet Cong flags and that kind of thing. And the Republicans started to crack the workers with Eisenhower, and they did, went farther with Nixon, and Reagan took a great many of them, and Trump took a great many of them. So you see that. But in the left, those people who are economically leftist to the extent they want more of the benefit of society for themselves and less for the rich are economically on the left, but they're not where the academic left is, because the academic left tends to be critical of the country and very internationalist. So you do have this schizophrenia, if you will, on the left, and it can be exploited by skillful conservative or moderate conservative politicians like the Republican leaders I just mentioned.
It was explained to me by Badgett, Adrian Wooldridge, that what's happened to Labour, why it's such a small party in comparison to the Conservatives, who are themselves, they're riven by factions. I love the fact that there are skeptics everywhere in Britain. But in any event, what's happened is that the Labour Party now depends on what are called the wine sippers, that would be the university lot, and the new arrivals, especially the neighbourhoods of London, the new arrivals who are easily persuaded by socialist policies that resemble something they left behind back home when they emigrated or their parents emigrated. I don't know if that's the same in here in the U.S. How is it in Canada? Because you have a different immigration status. You care a deal about careers and skill sets. How is it the university wine sippers, as they call them in Britain, and their allies on the left? Who are they?
Well, you see, here you've got a third party, which is an out-and-out left-wing party. The two main parties, the Liberals and the Conservatives, are generally reckoned to be center, but one's center-right and the other's center-left. And now the Liberals have, under Justin Trudeau, moved farther left with the apparent aim of squeezing the third party, the so-called New Democrats, squeezing them right off the road. But that's a tactical thing. Historically and traditionally, the two main parties are as I described, but the one in the middle of the equation, the Liberal Party, have been extraordinarily successful in moving far enough left to keep the New Democrats, the socialists as they are, on the edges and not allow them to intrude on the center. But without going so far left, they yield the center to the conservatives. And they bolster that by, for historic reasons, going back a whole century, a traditional comparative strength in Quebec. And the French Canadians are about a quarter of the population in this country. So the Liberals always run well ahead in that group. So those are the, you know, you've got particular factors mixed with factors similar to what operate in Britain and the UK. But again, the point that you made does hold here. The wine sippers, the academics, the journalists, and the senior civil servants and so on are, broadly speaking, leftish to really quite left. But they do have to, in the bosom of the Liberal Party, they have to make way for the rugged, hoary-handed men of labor who are in fact arch capitalists. They just want more of the system for themselves.
I meet a new prime minister. I'm learning history from Conrad of Canada. Wilfrid Laurier. Do I say his name? Laurier?
Laurier, it's pronounced.
Laurier.
It's French pronunciation.
He was a man who was responsible for the immigration success of Canada. Is that correct? Is he well regarded today, or is he also castigated as old fashioned?
No, he is very highly regarded, and the native activists haven't found anything to blame in his career, so he has got a pass on that, and he is universally regarded as a great statesman, and he was. He had four consecutive terms, and this was in a period, as you know, the United States roughly tripled in population from the Civil War to World War I, 31 million to 91 million people in that time, in what was it, 50 years. And Canada kept pace with that, which was an achievement. It was, you know, the United States was expanding at a pace the world had never seen before. On a scale the world had never seen before. Well, Canada was expanding at the same pace, but on a smaller scale because it's a smaller population. But in a way, given that Canada didn't have the great mystique of the New World and this huge city with the Statue of Liberty in its harbor to greet everybody as they came in, it was a particular achievement that Laurier was able to keep even on that. And as you say, there's a merit-based, and always has been to some degree, a merit-based immigration system. So they attracted people who were not only motivated, but who they, for the most part, they thought would hit the ground running. Even if there was a language problem, they had skills that the country wanted.
I ask you to mind read a man who's left us. What would the Prime Minister Laurier make of the Quebec separatist language thoughts these days? Bill 96.
Totally opposed. Totally opposed. He'd consider it an absolute outrage. One of the famous things he said was that, well, he disapproved of a traditionally rather anti-Catholic Protestant group. He would march with them himself to help establish their right to march in a public place on behalf of what they believed in, even though he personally was opposed to it. I mean, it was that traditional kind of fixation on the rights of people rather than the subdivision of people into polarized groups. And he was the first French Canadian prime minister, and he had to, and the first Roman Catholic prime minister to be elected. And he had to take a position on a matter of school organization in the new province that was comparatively ungenerous to his own church, but he did it in the national interest, and furthermore, he got the then Pope Louis XIII to approve of it. So he's regarded, has always been regarded in this country, as a figure of conciliation, not weakness, but conciliation.
A man to celebrate, the seventh Prime Minister of Canada, Wilfrid Laurier. He lived 1841 to 1919. He served as PM 1896 to 1911. Conrad Black. writing for the National Post about the success of our Canadian friends to the north. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.